Morning. Today's daf of Baba Kama's Kuf Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zech and Ishmael Libby Gabriela Bashmuel. We're in Kuf Dalam and Bay is the problem we're going to finish up from yesterday. The problem. The Gemara we're going to finish up. The Gemara we're going to finish up from yesterday is dealing with the problem of how do I send money. Okay, so the nowadays it's, you know, there are a lot of conveniences in terms of how to send money. But how do I send money to people? And really, specifically, the problem is as follows. I want to give money to somebody. I'm going to send it through a courier. But I'll tell you what, though. I owe them the money, and I'm obligated to pay them. But I don't want to take on the obligation of the achrayas haderech. Right? I want the obligation to be over the moment it gets into the hands of the shliach. So for this, the Gemara discussed and debated, is there a possibility, is there a way where we can construct a shliach where the moment I give it to him, that's it, I'm done. I wash my hands free from the obligation. So if you remember in the Amud Aleph, Kuf Dal Amud Aleph, so there was a machlokus between Rav Chista and Rabba. So the... just going back to Kuf Dal Amud Aleph, if you take a look back a quarter of the way down on the Amud, the two dots, Itmar Shliach Shasa Be'edim. So let's say I have a Shliach, but it's a super Shliach, I guess. Right, some elevated level of shliach where I not only appoint him, but I appoint him in front of witnesses. Right, we talked back then that there may be occasions where the in order to create a shliach you have to do it in front of witnesses. Right, I remember distinctly there was a distinction between shliach la'olacha versus shliach la'kabbalah. Okay, but that's getting. We're now in Baba Kama. We're talking about mamonos. So if the owner of that debt is, so if he sets up a shliach and he sets up a shliach be'edim and now I hand it over to the shliach who was appointed in front of edim, so is that going to relieve me from any obligation? If you look back at the Rashi, we did the Rashi yesterday. Reuven sheish lamas biat Shimon umina shliach be'edim lekablam himenu. So Reuven has money by Shimon and Reuven sets up a shliach in front of edim so that he can accept the money. So is that good? Meaning when we say good, meaning the moment that now Shimon hands the money over to Reuven shliach, is that ki'ilu, it's as if he has given it now over to Reuven, and that's it. I no longer am liable. The money has been given over. So if you remember yesterday, it was machlokus. Rav Chista was of the opinion that that's a shliach, meaning it's going to be good. That money is as good as delivered. And Rava says, no, it's not going to be a shliach. Okay. And the Gemara explained the machlokas, and the Gemara tried to bring proofs for Rav Chista, for Rabba, and that was a good part of yesterday's discussion. The Gemara now, we're continuing, this was a continuation of the discussion. I stopped in the middle awkwardly, so let's go back to the very bottom of Kuf Dalam and Aleph, and just start again from Amar Rav Yehuda Shmuel. So, Ein Mashachin Ma'us B'diukni. So, the Gemara quotes in the name of Shmuel that you can't send money using the Diukni. Diukni, Rashi explains, is that the owner of the item, right, item money, but the owner sends with the shliach some sort of very clear documentation that that he is appointed to receive the money, and it was the documentation was even signed. So Shmuel says that's not good enough. Meaning even that's not going to work. So the ve'afil eidim chosmim aleham, and even if you have witnesses sign in it. Now Rav Yochanan amar eidim chosmim aleham mishalchen. So Rav Yochanan disagrees on this point. He says no, if witnesses sign on this documentation, so you can send in front of the eid. So I'm Lishmuel Maitakante. So they say to Shmuel, okay, what do we do? Meaning, let's come up with a solution. We understand the problem. Problem is that according to Shmuel, money cannot be delivered where the person who hands it to the shliach is going to be exempt. He's going to be relieved from paying his obligation. There's got to be a solution. There's got to be a way for a person to be able to ship money with somebody, and the moment that he gives it to that somebody, so that's it. His obligation now has been relieved. So my takanta. So what do you do? So Had the Rabbi Abba have a masik zuzibud Rav Yosef bar Chama. So the Gemara tells the following story, where Rabbi Abba was he was an osha, meaning he was the one who was owed the money, and Rav Yosef bar Chama was the one who owed the money. So Amar le Rav Safra. So now he turns to Rav Safra and he says to Rav Safra, do me a favor, pick up my money. So go get me my money. So look, you're going there anyway. So while you're there, so now he goes there and he's now going to pick up the money. He's picking up the money from Rav Yosef. So now Rav Yosef's son steps in and he basically advocates on behalf of his father. And he says the following, Mi kasav lachitz kabalti. So he says now to Rav Safra, look, I understand that you were appointed to go and receive this money on behalf of Rabbi Abba. Okay, I got it. However, I'm going to ask you a simple question. You have a receipt? All right, is there anywhere where it's going to be documented that I gave you the money so that in the eventuality, I mean, hopefully the money's going to be delivered. But in the eventuality, the money's not going to be delivered, at least we're not going to continuously be obligated. I'm really low. So the he says, no, I didn't bring a receipt with me. So, I hachi zil bereish of yichtav lach his kabalti. So he says, okay, so now I'm telling you to go back, get a letter saying hiskabalti, that I've received the money, and that way you'll be able to, I'll give you the money, you'll hand me the receipt saying that the money was paid and we'll be done with it. And then Rav Yosef, I'd like to think that we're not in round two, but we're still in this first trip, and Rav Yosef is just reconsidering his position. And Rav Yosef says, look, I'll tell you what. Even if you wrote a receipt, I'm still not going to give you the money. Or I'm not going to allow my father to give you the money. Because Dilma Adas is Shachiv Rabbi Abba. Because here's my concern. My concern is that Rabbi Abba may die. Now, generally speaking, we're not worried that people are going to die. Meaning it's not a halachic consideration. That's generally true. There are numerous Gemaras that speak about this idea that we're not worried that people are going to die. But And that may, by the way, be Rashi. Rashi over here says, if you take a look at Rashi, Shachiv Rabbi Abba, the Zakinhu. Ukvar batos shichuso karim shitikablem. V'yavanteluhu minach borcheti b'alech yasme. All right, I just want to focus on the first part of Rashi. Rashi says Rabbi Abba is very old. Why would Rashi write that? So, in other words, in the context of this Gemara, so it's a real concern, meaning that Rabbi Abba was significantly old, and what would then happen? What would then happen is that it's still account receivable. It's still, you write the, so when Rabbi Abba dies, so that means though that there's still going to be a collection, it's just going to be that the estate is going to be the owner of that account receivable. So now, so I'm concerned, this is now, Rav Yosef was the one who owed the money, but now his son is advocating on his father's behalf. So he says, look, I'm concerned that if I give you the money in order to pay off the debt, what's going to end up happening is that you're holding the money, even if you wrote me a receipt, but before you get back there, so the Rabbi Abba's going to die, he's no longer the Baal Dvarim, he's no longer the owner of that obligation, the owner of the obligation is the children, and even though I have a receipt from Rabbi Abba, but he's no longer the owner of the debt. The owner of the debt is his kids, or the estate. So, even with his kabalti, I'm not going to give it to you. So, Amrle Velamaita Kante. So the Gemara says, okay. Again, problems, great. We love problems, but we also love solutions. So give me a solution. How can we hand the money over to the shliach and make that effectively a closing of the account? I paid the shliach. So the Gemara says, Zil nikninu lecha gavara v'ta'ad kasoflan iskabalti. So the Gemara says, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to become the owner of the debt. He'll transfer ownership of the debt to you. How do you transfer ownership of debt? So the Gemara says, do a kinyan agav. Kinyan agav is the following. I sell you property in conjunction with selling you property, so I can also make transfer movables as well. So the Gemara says, if you do such a kinyan, now of course this kinyan is going to require you to give over some of your property, not you. In this particular case, it's going to require Rabbi Abba to gift you, sell you some of his property, in this context probably a gift you some of his property, and in conjunction with the property, he's also going to sell you the debt as well. You will now become the owner of the debt. Once you become the owner of the debt and you acquired it through Kinyan Agav, then I'll give you the money. Because now, once I give you the money, right, you're the owner of the debt. So now I for sure have satisfied my obligation. So the Gemara says, Ki Hadra, Papa Avamasik, Trace Alfe, Zose Bechuzai. And the Gemara tells another story where we see exactly this kind of solution being employed. Rav Papa was owed a lot of money, 12,000 zuz from Beit Chuzai, people living in Chuzai. Akninu ni'alei l'Rav Shmuel bar Abba, agav asipa debeisa. And so, what does he do? So, Rav Papa, by the way, was a wealthy man, and we know elsewhere in the Gemara that he made his money through beer. Okay, beer producer. Okay, in America in the early 20th century, the Germans took it over. But we're the original beer manufacturers, at least Rav Papa was. So he had a big account. 12,000 zuzim were owed to him. So he sent Shmuel bar Abba to collect it. But understanding though that the reluctance of giving that kind of money to a shliach when that's not going to be the end of the story. So what Rav Papa did is Rav Papa sold the debt over to Rav Shmuel bar Abba. Now Rav Shmuel bar Abba, and how did he sell it? Through Kinyan Agav. He sold it, what the Gemara describes as Asipa de Beisei. Asipa de Beisei, Rashi over here says, Miftan Beiso, the threshold of the house. Okay, in other words, part of the house he gifted over. Now, let's leave it at that. So now he gave over part of the house to Rav Shmuel bar Abba. Together now, in conjunction with that, the debt that's called Kinyan Agav, and now he's the owner of the debt. Kiyas and Afik Lape Atavach, and now he went. He collected the money on behalf of Rav Papa. Rav Papa was so happy. It's a great Gemara. Rav Papa was so happy. Nafik Lape Atavach. He went out to greet him to the point of Tavach. Now I don't know geographically how far a trip it was, but basically, he successfully collected my money. I'm happy. I'm a happy man that my money now has been collected. Okay. Adkan. So that ends off the sugya from yesterday in terms of how exactly, whether or not a shlich that was appointed in front of Edim, they could serve as substitute for the owner of the debt. So that when the debtor now pays, is he going to satisfy his obligation? That was machlokus. We had a machlokus, another machlokus on Marayim, Rav Yochanan Shmuel, in terms of whether or not you come with a diukne, right? Some sort of clear simon that you were appointed to collect the debt. Is that going to be enough, right? And there is a discussion. I bypassed it. I took the fast track, but there is a discussion to try to how to relate the machlokas Rav Yochanan and Shmuel to the machlokas Rav Chis and Rabbah, right? Yeah, right. That requires better understanding. I just gave a cursory look at the Gemara, and finally, the Gemara's final discussion over there in terms of what kind of solutions you can do in order to be able to appoint the shliach not just as a shliach but become the owner of the debt. And the Gemara says two anecdotes. Yes. You can sell the debt over to the shliach through Kinyan Agav. Now he becomes the owner of the debt, and now he'll give him the power and the position to be able to collect the debt, and the debtor is going to be happy to do so because once he hands it to him, so that's it. The obligation now is over. He closes the account. Yeah, the Kinyan Agav is brought down. Rav Chista is also brought down as well in terms of the Yishliach being appointed in front of witnesses. That also is brought down. Okay. Yeah. So in other words,
you're acquiring the receivable
along with the karka. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, let's continue the Gemara. Nasan Losa Karen Vechule. We are now talking about the Chomish. Okay, very interesting. The Torah very clearly outlines that when a person owes an obligation to somebody and then makes a denial, and then compounds the denial with a shvua saying, I do not owe. Swear I don't owe. And then finally has an admission. So then the Torah says, this is what we have been discussing in the Mishnah, but the Gemara is going back and reviewing it, therefore I'm reviewing it as well. So therefore, you now have to pay Karen, the principal value, Chomish, another 25%, and Asham, you have to also bring a carbon Asham. These are the three basic requirements that you have to do in such a scenario. So we already spent some considerable time in the Gemara discussing the obligation of having to track him down in order to pay the Karen wherever he may be. Right? Agoz with Chaver, that was the Mishnah back in Kuv Gimel. Agoz with Chaver, Shavaputav, and Ishbalo, Yolichen, or Charav, Afilu, Madai. Even if it requires you to go to Madai, you have to go track him down, even in Madai. The Gemara is discussing now the following. There is a Chomish payment. how do we view the Chumash payment? It's classic analysis of the Gemara in terms of trying to take the Chumash and put it in a category. What are our two possible categories that we could put it in? So let me outline the possibilities, and then we'll I can think of three possibilities now that you mentioned that. Yeah. The Chumash could be number one. It could be just simply Knas. Right. Okay, it could be a fine. Meaning, we find that many times, right? A thief steals. So I just put the two words together. So the thief steals, and you're caught with it. So you have to pay kefal. You have to pay the item and its value again. So that's clearly kenas. Dal v'hei, you steal and then you shech the animal or you sell the animal. So you have to pay four or five times the amount. That's clearly kenas. Maybe the chumash over here could be viewed as a kenas. Okay, it could be a kenas, but it could be categorized as mammon. Yeah. In other words, it's just simply more obligation that I need to pay, put into the category of mammon. Another possibility is that this chumash could be viewed as kapara. It could be part of the atonement process. And think about it. Meaning when this person now swore falsely, he perjured in court, and he now admitted that what he did wrong, so the Torah says three things happen. One, he has to pay the principal value. That's mammon, clearly. I mean, he owes. Two, he has to pay chamish. Right now, categorically, we're debating. We're deliberating right now what that is. Three, he has to bring a carbon asham. We can all agree the carbon asham is kapara. That's clearly true. So in other words, I know what the extremes are, right? It's just a good way to think about it, conceptualize it. Yeah. I know the Karen is mammon. I know the asham, the carbon is a kapara. Okay, good. So now I have this middle guy. I have the chomesh. So now, as we approach the Gemara right now, trying to understand what the chomesh is, so I look at the bookends, and now I understand the Gemara's deliberation. On one side, you have mammon. On the other side, you have kapara. So what is this chomesh, and what kind of category are we going to put it in? That's the Gemara's... The Gemara doesn't articulate the question like I am, but that's what we're going to be deliberating.
It's kapara. Isn't it unusual for things to produce that kapara?
Under normal circumstances, a kapara does not go to a recipient. But I'll give you an example where a kapara for sure goes to a recipient, and that is kofir. Meaning, if my animal kills somebody, and the animal is an ashura muad, so the Torah says that you have to provide kofir. Now, the word kofir is basically kapara. Now, the recipient of that kofir is going to be the victim, or victim's family. Victim's dead. But in other words, yes. It is unusual, but I could certainly say precedent.
How about kness?
Right, we entertain that possibility as well. That
kness does fall on kapara, or is it under mom?
So the Gemara generally talks about before Hamada Bedin and after Hamada Bedin. Meaning before Hamada Bedin, it's hard to wrap our heads around what exactly it is. After the court obligates you to pay, then it turns into a monetary payment. That's generally the Gemara's delineation. Of kenas. Okay, so with that stated as an introduction, we start with the Gemara. We're in Kuf Dalam and Beis. We're about halfway down the Amud, and we begin this discussion. So the Gemara right away jumps on a position, and that is, it's mammon. So the Gemara sees it from the Mishnah. Now, the interesting part is, the Gemara doesn't really tell us how it sees it from the Mishnah. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Amachum Shem Mamonahu, Midi Itzrech Leila Misnei, Ain't sarich lelech acharav. The Mishnah had to tell us that when it comes to caring, when it comes to the principal value, track the victim down, give it back to him. When it comes to chomesh, the Mishnah, Torah Shabbat, the Mishnah says you don't have to track him down. Rashi says, what do you see from that? Alma, mamono ugabe. So you see that's a monetary obligation. The fact that you do not need to track him down, so that means that it's just simply an obligation that you need to pay. Meaning, had it been kapara, so that means the following. That means that I have to pay back the principal, and I have to pay back the chomesh, and I couldn't bring the carbon asham until A and B has been satisfied. By virtue of the fact that the Mishnah over here says, look, you're obligated to pay the chomesh, but it's an obligation. You don't have to track him down. So from there, the indication would seem that it falls into the category of mammon. Certainly a monetary obligation, but not holding you back from having to bring, from you being able to bring the carbon asham. Now, the imais mishamalei the yershim. And then the Gemara makes another point, and that's the following. Let's say The person dies, the gazlan dies. So now the victim dies. Sorry. So now you're going to take this chomesh and you're going to pay it to the children. So that is another indication that it's money. Meaning, if it's kapara.
No, what can you say? It's a gazlan.
Who died? The gazlan. Nigzal or the gazlan?
His heirs have to pay the debt, no?
The
owe me money.
No, I'm sorry, Rashi. Right, you're right. You're right. You're right. Rashi. Right. We're talking about the Gazlan. Right. The Gazlan dies. Right. So now the Yorshim have to pay the Chumash, right. Meaning that this is a account payable on the part of the father, and this rolls down now to the estate. Now the kids have to pay. Now what do the kids have to pay? The kids have to pay Karen and Chumash. Now, if this was a kapara, if the chumash was put into the category of kapara, so after a person dies, right, is there a requirement of kapara? No, the death is kapara. That's it. There's no more kapara opportunities for the children. So the for the deceased. Okay. So the imais masham leyoshim utananami, and the Gemara says, I'll give you another proof, and that is not since the karen mishbal chumash are mosif chumash al chumash, and then we'll go back to the Mishnah. What do we learn back in the Mishnah? That let's say after having paid the karen. So, and now the demand comes for the chomish, and you say, oh, chomish, no, I don't know it. And then you start denying the chomish. Like I described back in the Mishnah, old habits are hard to break. So you denied once, you're now just simply, you're back to your old ways, you're denying again. But here, you paid the Karen. You're just denying the chomish. So what did the Mishnah say? Because you made a denial on the chomish, and you swore you don't know the chomish, so now you have to pay the chomish, and a chomish is tacked on the chomish. So another proof that the chomish is money, because if the chomish were kapara, so yes, you're denying kapara, but okay, and that's not good, but right, that's a you problem. That's not a him problem. So clearly, again, it's money. So the Gemara basically now cites three good rayas that the way to look at chomish is that it's money. One, the Mishnah says that you don't have to track him down and hunt him down to send it to him. It's just simply a monetary obligation. Two is that if the gazlan dies, so the children have to pay the chomish as well. And three is that if you deny the chomish, you're going to have to pay chomish on the chomish. So the chomish clearly is viewed as money. V'tanyin amihach, and the Gemara says, and just we'll wrap it all up with tied with a bow. We have a brisa, and the brisa says it goes to chaver v'nish below meis yoshem masham and karen v'chamish. That if a person steals and makes a shvua and he dies, so now the yoshem have to pay karen v'chamish. So they have to pay the karen, they have to pay the chamish. Meaning these are monetary obligations that fall onto the children, and the children are obligated to pay. Uptur mina asham. Now the children don't have to bring the carbon asham because that's too late. The guy died. The guy now has received his kapara, and we'll go even one step further. Even if, let's say, before he died, he set aside the carbon asham. Right, this is Rashi, I'm saying over. And he set aside the carbon asham. Still the children are not going to bring the carbon asham because the whole purpose of the carbon asham is to provide kapara. He's dead. Kapara no longer needed. No longer effective. And so therefore, the carbon's now simply not going to be brought. Okay. Adkan. So, with as much as I presented it to begin with as a question as to whether or not chomish is a kapara, whether it's mamon, the Gemara doesn't really spend much time deliberating. The Gemara goes right for three proofs from the Mishnah and a brisa, all pointing clearly to this idea that chomish is viewed monetarily as mamon, not as kapara. The Gemara then challenges. So reminu. I skipped the parenthesis. So the Gemara says, now, you're telling me that how do we view chomish? It's mamon. And therefore, if the gazlan dies, the children have to pay. The Gemara says, is that true? The children have to pay the chomesh. So, Uriminu, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Now, this brisa, I know, is Taurus Kohanim. I know because Rashi told me. Unfortunately, not because I know Taurus Kohanim. But Rashi says this is Taurus Kohanim. Just in general, we should all know, every now and then, it's important just to get the Yesodos, get some basics in terms of Taurus Shabbat Peh. So, before there was Gemara, before there was Mishnah, there was always Taurus Shabbat Peh, right? Moshe Kibbel Torah Misinai, right? Moshe got the entire Torah from Har Sinai, including Torah Shabbat, including Torah Shabbat Peh, but in terms of written forms, so before there was Mishnah, before there was Gemara, there was actual written forms of Torah Shabbat Peh, and that was the Medrash Halacha. The Medrash Halacha, a generation earlier, not we're not talking much earlier, but a generation earlier before the Mishnah, so you had the, maybe two generations. Okay. Okay, sorry, I'm overthinking it, but it's not a bad thing. Okay, so maybe two generations before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi put the mission down, so there was Medrash Halacha. So yeah, it's Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. So they were the responsible parties of Medrash Halacha. On the Medrash Halacha on Sefer VaYikra, so it goes by a couple names. So it's sometimes you'll hear it and you'll be like, oh, that's not, I didn't know it was that. It goes by two separate names. It goes by Sifra, and it's also called Toras Kohanim. Okay, if you want to know, the Medrash Halacha on Shmos is called Mechilta, and the Medrash Halacha on Bamidbar and Dvarim is called Sifri. Okay, not to be confused. In other words, I use the word Medrash, don't confuse it with Midrashim. Meaning the Midrashim are the homiletics of the Chachamim on the Torah, but the Midrashim were written much later. Midrashim were written by the Amoraim. So, again, it's part of the Masorah, but in other words, penned by the Amoraim. So, but we're talking about Medrash Halacha, so that's what the Gemara here is making reference to. Uriminu. So the Gemara here is quoting now from Toras Kohanim, which of course makes sense because we're analyzing a Pasuk in Vayikra. Okay, it works out well that way. Before I read the Toras Kohanim, just one more word of introduction. That's the following. The Torah, when describing this this parsha of denial of a monetary obligation, the Torah says that he has to return the stolen item as exela asher gazal, that he stole. Which means then that the only time that there's a requirement of Karen Chomish V'Asham is only when you have the stolen item that you yourself stole. Let's say you have a stolen item that you yourself didn't steal. For example, Dad stole it. Dad died. He left you with the stolen item. So now is there a requirement of Karen Chomish V'Asham? So that's what the Toras Kohanim is addressing. So now with all that stated, now let's see it inside. Uriminu, the Gemara now challenges the following. So when is it that you don't pay chomesh on that which your father stole? Bizman shelo nishba. Lo huva lo aviv. So that's when nobody made a shvua. Not you, not the father. So huva lo aviv, aviv lo huva aviv. But let's say that somebody made a shvua. And here, we can have three permutations. Either one, dad made a shvua. Or two, you made a shvua. Meaning the nigzal comes after you, says, give me back the item. You look at him and say, I don't know what you're talking about. And not only do I not know what you're talking about, there's no such obligation. And he swore, the child swore. Or the third permutation is, dad swore and the kid swore. Meaning dad, before he died, was demanded the money. Dad said, don't have it, don't know what you're talking about. Swore to the effect. Then he goes after the son, and the son also makes a shua as well. Minayin, how do I know that in all these different cases there is no requirement to pay chomesh v'asham? So tamalama asher gazal ve'asher ashak v'hu lo gazal v'lo ashak. So this obligation of chomesh is only going on the thief, since the kid is not the thief. Now the kid did deny. And he had a shvua, but he's not the thief, therefore he doesn't pay chamash. What do we have right now? A stira. We just learned in Brisa number one, no, we didn't just learn, but like 10 lines above, we learned that the Brisa says that the child has to pay Karen v'chamash. And that was, in fact, one of the proofs that this is a monetary obligation. And meanwhile, this Brisa is telling us that since the child is not the thief, this Toras Kohanim, since the child is not the thief, so therefore the child is not going to be paying chomish. That's called a stira. Am Rav Nachman, Lokasha, Kanshahoda, Kanshalahoda. So the Gemara now brings in the name of Rav Nachman distinction. And the distinction is whether or not there is an admission or there is no admission. Rashi explaining the answer of Rav Nachman. Rashi Kancha Hoda of the Bechayev Achash Nishba. Meaning, here's the timeline. Dad stole. Dad denied. Dad perjured in court, swearing that he didn't steal. And then afterwards, dad had an admission. So at that point in time, now with the admission comes all that obligation of Karen V'chomish. Now, in such a scenario, now the son has to pay it. Rashi, Avi Bechai Vachash Nishba Mitzchai Vachumsha Mishama Yorshin. That is now where the kids have to pay it, because all that obligation now becomes monetary obligation, and that devolves on the kids. Ubraisa B'Toras Kohanim, and as far as Toras Kohanim is concerned, Bishelo Hoda. That's talking about where dad didn't make an admission. So now the Gemara, let's jump right back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, well, dad didn't make an admission. And let's assume now that the son didn't make an admission. So who has to pay anything? So Elo, this is the Gemara's next question. Elo hoda karen nami lo mishalim. Well, if no one's admitting to the obligation, so then there's nothing to pay. And obviously, we're talking about a case where there are no witnesses who saw the event. The Gemara says, now, maybe you'll tell me, well, that's not a question, maybe you're just right. Maybe there's nothing to pay. The Gemara says, but that can be. The Gemara says, no, because the Braisa is discussing Chumash and deliberating Chumash, or, you know, considering Chumash, which means that if we're talking about Chumash, so that means that, of course, the assumption is that you're paying the Karen. So don't tell me that we're not paying anything. Why are we only having a discussion of Chumash in the Braisa? The Otanya, and the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, there's another thing to also take into consideration. When do I pay the Karen of your father's theft? That is when dad made a shvua. And you made a shvua. Aviv alo hu? Hu velo aviv? Lo hu velo aviv? But what if nobody made a shvua? Minayin? How do I know that I still have to pay Karen? Tam lomer, gzela v'oshek aveda upikadon. When the Torah describes a denial, the Torah says a denial on theft. Oshek aveda pikadon. Doesn't matter how the money got into my hands. Whether I stole it, whether I extorted it, whether I found a lost item and I just simply denied having it, whether it was a pikadon, he handed the item to me to watch and then I just simply deny ever having received the item. So in all these cases, as long as there was a denial, so even without a shvua, so then you have to pay. And then punctuates the Braisa, Yesh Talmud. The Braisa ends with the two words of Yesh Talmud. Now, we have to answer the question, because clearly even without a shvur there's an obligation to pay Karen, and in a moment we're going to address, meaning not only for the one who stole but even for the son as well. So, but before we answer the question, the Gemara just wants to analyze those last two words. V'yasa Rav Huna v'kamar la shmita. So Rav Huna is now saying over the brisa that we just learned together. Amale Rav Brei. So Rava is learning by his father and unsure as to whether or not he heard the father correctly. Meaning, how did the Braisa end with two words, Yesh Talmud? Now, if you heard me say it, and you weren't looking inside, and it's Torah Shabbat Peh, and it's just an oral transmission from one to the other, so that last two words can come out as one of two possibilities. Yesh Talmud Kamramar. So, in other words, the son's asking his father, did you say the words Yesh Talmud, or Yesh Talmu, or did you say that he needs to pay? Kamar, Mar. So, and Rashi points out over here, what's the difference between Yesh Talmud versus Yesh Talmud? So Rashi says, if it's Yesh Talmud, that means that the conclusion that if the father dies, the son has to pay the principal, Yesh Talmud is based on Psukim. Meaning, it's not necessarily a logical conclusion, but just simply Psukim that speak to this idea. Or Yesh Talmud, says Rashi, means, of course the kid has to pay because father stole, and there's a victim. And the victim is owed the money. So then the kid is going to have to pay because mistaber. I mean, in other words, it's logical. So, and in terms of what the halachic nafkamina would be, I'm going to be honest, I'm not sure. Rashi doesn't say. But either way, Amalei Yesh Talmud Kamina. So now, Umiribud to cry. So the father, when he said over the Braisa, clarified to his son, I said Yesh Talmud, two different words, and meaning that the conclusion is based on the Psukim. So Amri, Elamai Lo Hoda. So the Gemara says, okay, look. If there was a so again, we have a steer between two brises. The first brisa talks about an obligation to pay Karen and Chumash. The father stole, father lied, father died, so there's an obligation to pay Karen and Chumash. Then we quoted another brisa where the other brisa says, yes, there's an obligation for the child to pay Karen, but not Chumash. Okay. And right now, Rav Nachman gave an answer. Well, we'll explain the discrepancy. One was where there was admission, and the other one where there was no admission. And now the Gemara is essentially asking the question, well, wait one second. If there was no admission, neither by the father nor by the son, so then who's got to pay? So the Gemara says, "My lo hoda lo hoda avi, v'hoda beno." So the Gemara says, okay, obviously when we say that the father didn't make an admission, somebody needs to make an admission, and the answer is very simple, the son did. Meaning the father stole, the father was asked you know, can you give it back to me? Father said, I don't know what you're talking about. Father perjured himself, but he never made an admission. So because he never made an admission, the only time that you are going to be paying Karen and Chomish is only when you stole, lied, and admitted. So here, father did no such thing. So the Gemara says, okay. So the son made the admission. The Gemara says, V'nechai b'no chomish ashvu didein. So the Gemara says, wait, 1 second. So let's now go over this timeline. Dad stole, okay? Dad died. Now the son has the item, has a stolen item. And now the victim goes over to the son and says, okay, I'd like it back. Son says, don't know what you're talking about. Right? Not here. And he continues to bother him. No, what do you mean? Of course you have it. He says, the son says, what do you mean? I'll swear I don't have it. And then the son makes a shvuah. Now the Gemara says, under such circumstances, now, if and when the son makes an admission, so he pays Karen, but he doesn't pay Chomish. And now to that, the Gemara asks what seems to be a pretty obvious question. Now, let's think about it. Okay, the son was not the one who actually stole it. Dad is the one who actually stole it. But ultimately, the son knew that he received stolen goods. The son denied having it. The son swore he didn't have it, and then he admitted it. So shouldn't the son now have to pay on his own shvuah? Gemara's next question. So the Gemara says, "V'nechay b'no chomesh ha-shvuah didei." I don't understand. The son should now be obligated to pay not only the principal, but the chomesh. He himself made the shvuah. So Amri b'shein gzela kayemes. The Gemara says, "Well, we're talking about a case where the gzela no longer is in this world." The Gemara says, "Wait 1 second. B'shein gzela kayemes. I feel in karen namin lo mishalim." So the Gemara says, "If the item is no longer there in this world, so he doesn't have to pay the principal value." We're going to open up the 10th parak of Baba Kama, learning together that if dad steals something and the item is no longer in this world, the son does not have an obligation to pay it back. That's going to be our discussion at the beginning of the 10th parak. And we'll discuss why, and we'll discuss Kibbut Ava'im, and that's coming up in the 10th parak, but we're going to learn that. So the Gemara says, if the stolen item is no longer there, son doesn't have to pay back. So the Gemara says, "Lotzricha diika achrayus." So the Gemara says, "Well, we're talking about a case where there is achrayus, meaning that when the dad stole, so now that turns into an obligation, and dad not only had the stolen item, but dad also had properties as well. It becomes an obligation, and the properties that dad owned are there as a shibud, as a security against his obligation. So when dad dies, even though the gzela is no longer in the world, but there is the land which is leaning, which is securing that obligation. That is, therefore, the requirement of the son to pay, based on the shibud nechasim. Now, these next lines of Gemara are a little bit tricky. I say a little bit tricky because Rashi is firmly of the belief that we shouldn't be going to these next lines of the Gemara. So I'll read it, but just I'm gonna go a little bit fast over here because Rashi gives an explanation in terms of why they don't belong over here. So just understand that I'll read the lines of Gemara. Rashi objects to these lines of Gemara. He explains the reasons. Had there been more time, I'd do this a little slower. But so the Gemara says, even with a sheep, but even with a mortgage, but it's a milva alpeh, it's still an oral obligation, and you do not collect oral obligations from the yorshim. So amri b'shamad b'din. The Gemara says, yeah, but we're talking about a case where dad was already taken to court. B'shamad b'din. Afil chomeshamim misham. The Gemara says. And if there was Hamad Abedin, so not only should be paying Karen, should be paying Chumash as well. So, now we're back to the Gemara that Rashi says, this is where it really the discussion should really pick up. Armor of Huna Bereja of Yeshua, Lefi She'ein Mishamim Chumash, Al Kfiras Shibud Karkos. So the Gemara says, principally, here's how it works. Okay. Dad stole. Dad died. The item now is no longer in the world, it was consumed. And now, but dad also left properties. And there is a lien of that obligation placed on the property. So now when the son is being confronted by the victim, so now the son has to pay, not because the son has to pay the stolen item from the father stole, but because of the shibud nechasim, because of the lien. Now the son says, I'm denying it. And he swears that he doesn't deny it. Sorry. Thank you. Okay, I also just heard what I said. Right? He swears that he didn't know it. And then finally he makes an admission. So now, shouldn't he be paying Karen for Chomish? So the Gemara says to that, no. And the reason why is the following. Because effectively, what is he swearing about? The stolen item is no longer here in this world. So he's not really swearing about the stolen item. He's stolen on the Sheba Nechasim. He's swearing on properties. Okay, it's a cardinal rule that we're going to see time and again. There's no shul on karka, meaning it does not have legal status when you swear on karka. So since his oath is really going just on the karka, so therefore halachically, it is simply not considered a shvua. And that's why the son, even though he's going to have to pay, because there is a shibud on the property, but that shvua that he makes is not going to produce an obligation of chomesh, because principally that obligation is on the property, not on the gzela. That's explanation of number one of the Gemara. Rava Amar Hakabamaiskin Kingoshaisa Diskaya Shah Aviv Mufkedis Biyada Kherim. So the Gemara says, or another possibility is the following. Dad stole. Where is the stolen good? Not totally removed from the world, but just simply being held by a third party. Somebody else is holding the money. Now, Karen Mishalim Hadaha Isas. Now, as far as Karen is concerned, the son's going to have to pay because it's here, even though he didn't know about it, but it was by a third party. But Chamish L'Mishalim Dechi Ishtabe Bekushta Ishtabe Daha Lo Havayade. And as far as holding him culpable and accountable for the shvua that he made, well, no, we're not going to hold him accountable. Because when he made the shvua, he literally did not know about it. It was being held by a third party. So that's, you only are going to be paying chomish when you make a shvua, knowing that you have it, and lying. But here he didn't know. Okay, so ad kan. That is the end of the sugya. So, right, the summary points are the following. Number one, the question of how to categorize chomish, mamon. The Gemara says clearly we're going to put it under the category of mamon, so that it is a monetary obligation, and three proofs that the Gemara brings that it is in fact mamon. And then the rest of the sugya was a discussion of there are going to be circumstances where the son is going to have to pay the chumash obligation, circumstances when the son is not going to be paying chumash obligation. Brisa's speaking to both of those points. Rav Nachman's Yishuv HaBrisa's, which is that it depends whether the father made the admission or did not make the admission, and then a discussion, right? The next discussion, well, if there's no admission, so then how could there be a current obligation altogether? And the Gemara to that also spoke out various explanations for that as well. Okay. Continuing the Gemara, we're on Kof Hamad Aleph, chutz mi pachos shavei pruta bekeren. Okay. If there is less than a shavei pruta of the principal, so then there's no longer this obligation to hunt him down, track him down, go to Madai, etc., etc. Amar Papa Lo Shana L'Shein Gzela Kayemis. Of Gzela Kayemis, Tzarech Leilech Acharav. The Surah Papa says over Halacha, and that is the following. Let's say the Gzela is still intact, even though it is almost worthless. Not totally, but almost worthless. It's less than a Shavu Pruta. Rav Papa says, you can pick yourself up, pay whatever travel expenses you need to pay, and you go and you return it to him. Why? So the Gemara, so Rav Papa's explanation is because even though its current appraisal is less than a Shavu Pruta, but you never know, right? In other words, there is fluctuation of price, and Chayshin and Shema Tiyakir. I'm concerned, says Rav Papa, that it may go up in value to become the point of a Shavu Pruta, and therefore, because of that market fluctuation, so therefore you're going to have to return to. That is the first version of Rav Papa. The Gemara then brings in the second version. Ikad Amri Amri Rav Papa Lo Shna Gzela Kayemes Lo Shna Shein Gzela Kayemes Ein Tzarich Leilech Acharav L'Shem Atiyakel Lo Chayshina. In version number two of Rav Papa says, no, you don't have to worry about price fluctuation. Meaning it's a reality. Markets do fluctuate, but right here, right now, what's its value? If it's currently appraised for less than a Shavu Pruta, so then you do not have to worry about future fluctuation. Amar Rava. Gemara's discussion coming up from this point to nearly the end of the daf are going to be discussing related issues of concerns about possibilities, future possibilities. Amar Rava Gazal Shalsh Agudos B'Shalsh Prutos. Let's say you stole three bundles. The three bundles were valued at three prutas, so that means one bundle per equals one pruta. Vuhuzlu, and then after having stolen it, now it goes down to market. And now the three bundles are only worth two prutas. Now let's say you return two bundles, which means that you now have one bundle remaining, but at current market value, it's less than a pruta. You have an obligation to return it to him. The Gemara says, and this point is reflected in the following braisa. Let's say you steal chametz. Pesach comes and goes. But because it's now chametz avar lava pesach, the value, the market value, the current market value of the chametz is zero. Now, despite that, you go back to the guy and you say, here's the chametz that I stole. Very sorry. I'm sure that apology is going to be very effective. The Harisha Chalafanecha. Now, time of Jesus Beinai, Alas Beinai, Afagav Dehasha La Mamona, Kevin de Mikar Mamona, who by Shlome. Hachanami, Afagav Dehasha, Lo Shavapruta, Kevin de Mikar, Vishavapruta, by Shlome. And the point is as follows. Let's say now that after Pesach, you have no longer have the Chametz in possession. You, the Gazlan. Now you have to pay. Wait a second, I have to pay? Do you know what the chametz was worth? It's worth zero. Yes, that's true. But it's worth zero now. And that's not what that's not the case when you stole it. When you stole it, it had a real value. So, even though, yes, it's true, if I would have returned the chametz be'en, so then I fulfill my obligation. But because you no longer have the chametz be'en, and because when you stole it, it had a real value, so therefore you have to pay its value. Same thing with the bundles. Now, even though right now, current state of the remaining one last bundle is less than a shavar pruta, but since its original value was that of a pruta, you have to pay it back. By Rava Gazal Shtei Agudas Bepruta Vehichzer Lo Achas Mehen. Let's say you stole two bundles. The two bundles collectively was worth one pruta. So that means half pruta for each bundle. But still, you stole a shavar pruta. And you return one of the two. Mahu mi armin hashta like a gzela, odil mahalo hader lo hader gzela dahave gabe. So, do we say that in the current state right now, what you have is less than a pruta, or no? In other words, you didn't return that which you stole. So, hada pashtek zela ein kana shav ein kana. Now, after asking the question, he says emphatically, no gzela, no hashava. Which, what does that mean? The Gemara says exactly that. What does that mean? So, I gzela ein kana hashava ein kana. Well, I'm sorry, hashava yesh kana. Well, if you no longer have the gzela, meaning because all you have left is just one bundle of and a half a pruta, so then didn't you fulfill your obligation of hashava? Hachi kamar. Afa pish gzela ein kana mitzvah hashava ein kana. Gemara says no. What is meant is the following. Yes, it's true. What you currently have left by you is only one bundle, valued at a half a pruta. And that's true. And monetarily, that's halachically insignificant. But you did not fulfill the mitzvah of hashava. You stole two bundles, you need to return two bundles. The Amar Rav Hari Amar Nazir Shegilcha V'Shar Shtei Saros. Okay, it sounds like a familiar conversation. The Gemara Nazir, this is verbatim. Rav says, you're a Nazir. At the conclusion of your Nazirus, you have a mitzvah to shave your head. Nazir Shegilcha V'Shar Shtei Saros, also V'lo Klum. And you didn't do a full shave, you left two hairs on your head. Halachically, two hairs is significant. Therefore, you did not fulfill the mitzvah of shaving. By Rav Gila Chachas Venisha Achas Mahu. Rav asked the following question. Let's say, of the two remaining hairs, he cut one, but before he got to the last hair, it falls out. Amalei Rav Acha Mediftala Ravina Nazir Shegila Achas Kami Baalei. So the Gemara says, don't understand. What are we talking about over here? Every time you get a haircut, you know, in other words, if you worked in really slow motion, you'll notice that all the hair doesn't come out, it doesn't get cut at the same time. It's one by one individually. So the Gemara says, I'm not really following your discussion. If, let's say, the two hairs remaining, he cuts the second to last hair, and the last hair falls out, lemaisa, all of his hair has been removed. It's he got his hair cut. The last one didn't get cut, but lamaisa, all the hair's been cut. So larava, I'm sorry. So kami baile larava, amale lo tzricha kagon shenasher achas mehen vegilach achas. So the Gemara says no. Of the two remaining hairs, one falls out. So now he's only doing a shave, but a shave on one hair, which halachically is significant. Me and Marina and Hashem Yaz are like a shear. So that we, do we say that currently at this point in time, it's not the requisite shear? Oh, Dilma, halav giluchu demi kara hashay shtei saras. Vasha ki gigalach lo have be saras. Or do we look at result? Result is no more hair in the head. So the Gemara says, Hadapashte, Sarah and Khan Giluach and Khan. So the Gemara's answer is there's no hair, but there's no mitzvah of Giluach. So the Gemara says, What? The Gemara says, Isera in Khan Giluach Yeshkan, Hachi Kama. Afa Pisha Sarah in Khan mitzvah Giluach and Khan. Look, you don't have any hair on your head. But can you say you fulfill the mitzvah of Giluach? No, you cannot. And Tosfos over here points out, because now you cannot say that you fulfill the mitzvah of Giluach, Tosfos actually goes over two possibilities. I'll just write now, full disclosure. I'm only going to say over the first part of Tosfos, Ume'akev melishtos yayin al matam lemesim. So now, because you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Giluach, it's holding you back, meaning that you're still in your nazir restrictions. You can't drink wine, you can't go to the cemetery, you're still within restriction, even though you conclude your counting, you finish your naziris in terms of counting, but this Giluach is the end of the procedure, and because you didn't shave two hairs from your head, so therefore you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Giluach, even though effectively there's no hair on your head. Okay, that's one way Tosfos says it over. Tosfos says it over a different way, but that is going to be the conclusion. So again, we're looking at action versus result. If, let's say, the action was, I didn't do the mitzvah, but the result is, effectively, there's nothing left, so do we focus on the action or do we focus on the result? Sounds like from the Gemara, in the two examples that are given, there's one more example that we're going to go over tomorrow, we are focusing on the action more than the result.